Hey, everybody, welcome to yet another edition of the greatest damn old podcast you ever seen. This here is Deep Fat Fried.
Yeehaw!
Oh, yeah, boy.
Boy, woo! I'm fried right now, TJ.
Welcome to another edition of this here Southern Fried Podcast, Deep Fat Fried, man. We gonna fry up some delicious content, what the audience can eat and such, with all the fixings. Get you a big old slice of paw, get you a heaping spoonful of Scotty, and maybe if there's room, even a little TJ, too.
Wash it down with some TJ.
TJ's your little dessert?
Mm-mm.
Maybe like a milkshake, a banana-flavored milkshake, TJ.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to shake that milk, boy. Woo! Man titties, boy. You love them man. I saw Paul loves them man titties,
unfortunately,
bro.
Unfortunately, TJ, your milkshake does not bring all the
bullshit. Oh, it does.
It does not, TJ.
Bullshit. You seen my yard? Full of the boys. All over it. They fucking, the milkshake brings them. You can't help it. They can't help
it. I don't
know. They're powerless.
You've done a video about man tits.
Man titties, shaking so pretty.
What was the reaction to that video? Maybe there's a bunch of neckbeards that are lusting after
the people,
you.
The fucking, it brought the boys to the yard, bitch.
The neckbeard,
and they were like,
autist?
You know what they said? You know what they said, Scotty? They said it was better than yours.
I can
teach you, Scotty, but you know what? I have to charge you. $7.99.
How did that song get into everybody's head to where all these years later people are still
singing? I still remember that song.
I don't know how.
It's because
it was just
a shit song.
It's a shit song, but it was used so many times.
I don't believe that anymore.
Oh, you think it was a great song?
Yeah, I've changed my standard for what makes a song good.
Awesome.
It's no longer about whether or not I personally like the song.
I love consistency, TJ.
Yeah, well, you know what? I changed it up. Because I realized something that, you know, if a song gets stuck in your head, it's a good song.
I got it.
Doesn't matter.
I've got a narrative that I currently want to push, so I've changed my entire fucking outlook on an entire medium.
No, I mean, I already changed this up before. Like, I hate that song, Africa. Like, I personally hate it, but right. I have to admit it's a good song because it gets stuck in my head all the time.
Yeah, dude. Well, I mean, Africa is a good song, though.
It's not.
It's a great song.
Dun, dun, ba, dun, ba, ba. I mean, it is. It has to be because it gets stuck in my head, but I don't like it. It makes me mad, personally.
Dude, I fucking hate the hat you're wearing, dude. I'm just listening to you talk, and I fucking hate that fucking hat.
Good.
It's like, why are you wearing such a piece of shit hat?
Good, Scotty. Good.
He did say before the show, I'm going to wear my dorkiest hat today.
He wasn't lying, man.
Oh, yeah, this hat sucks.
Dude, you look like you're a ripoff of the Jason Miller, like the fucking new Jason Miller that we saw.
See, I think if
can't even afford a real cowboy hat or skull, though.
If TJ had like a big old beard or like a big mustache or something, that hat, he might, because he would look like the Australian explorer that it implies that he is. Isn't that like one of those Australian outback type of hats?
I don't know. Maybe.
Pull your headphones off real quick because it folds up on one. Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, you can do it like, it can fold up. There's like things where it can like attach here.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's like a pirate hat almost.
Yeah, you can attach it on the side or you can let it hang loose.
Or you can just have it down.
It could be down. It could
That's
be
a
up.
Versatile
it's
hat.
A versatile fucking hat, bro.
And it is very, very dorky.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
This is the Tilly hat, dude.
A Tilly hat? Oh, you know what, dude? You know who else has one of those? This should cement its coolness in your mind. Because he was showing it to me one time when I was over at Steve's. Dude, Stevie has one of those.
He's got
a Tilly hat.
Stevie has a bunch of weird hats.
He was telling me that you could take it outside in the rain and it just, you know. It
Fuck left. That hat!
Dude, Stevie actually owns a top hat.
Stevie loves hats. As you know, he got that fucking bug from you. He inherited that part of the gene.
Next time Stevie's on here, dude, I'm like, you know, Stevie, you have to wear a fucking suit with your fucking top hat and a cane.
Yeah, I want him to wear that Tilly hat.
Hear me out, Scotty. We should lure Stevie here and murder him.
Okay, what else?
Like, That's it.
What do we gain from it, though?
Oh.
Like, what's the gain?
Dead Stevie?
I mean, does Stevie have like a life insurance policy?
Yeah! Life insurance policy. That's what we do.
How big is the policy?
Oh, as much as we can get. We should take out like several and then murder him the very next day. Won't be suspicious at all.
Not at all.
No paper trail to that at all.
No.
Definitely won't make you the immediate prime suspect at all.
Yeah.
Sounds like something you could get away with. I don't want to take part because I don't want to face the counterattack of Stevie.
We should get some life insurance on Paul, because, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we don't even murder Paul, though.
I mean, he fucking, like, he passed out that one day and shit. I thought he was dead then.
Right.
And it was really distressing. But if I had a big life insurance policy, it would have been kind of like, oh, finally.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Yes.
I mean, I can't stop you.
No more work.
Bullshit, TJ. You got that $5 million policy, then you might Paul might be falling a lot more. Like, your leg might be out. Oh, no, Paul. Oh, no, Paul's dead.
Why don't we get a joint life insurance policy that pays both to the first one to die?
Yeah, we should all get life insurance policies so that we all have motives to murder each other.
That sounds, it would add a little spice to the dynamic.
Yeah,
you know?
You know? Be a little bit more exciting, you know? Hey, you want a drink? No, dog, I'm good. You know? I don't want to have the show at your house no more.
Murderers. Yeah, I don't really trust it.
Bunch of murdering freaks.
Murdering motherfuckers.
But you know what you do, TJ?
Always trying to kill each other and shit.
TJ, this is actually how you do that and pull that off.
Uh-huh.
So you poison all of our drinks, not just me and Paul's.
Ah.
You build up an immunity to the fucking poison.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, oh, someone tried to kill us all. You're like, good, I somehow survived. I don't know how. Like, yeah. Like you make it so like you're still going to have negative effects, but it's like you must have got a lower dose. Like, well, I only took a little sip of the drink. Yeah. We're just fucking dead.
Use Iocane powder, dude.
Because you gave us the massive fucking dose, dude.
Yep. Just slowly but surely build up your immunity.
Yeah, dude. What's that fucking shit called? They use it all the time to murder people on Forensic Files. Succinylcholine, I think it's called. Succinylcholine?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Never heard of it.
It's like a flavorless thing. You just put it in people's drinks. They drink it, and then their fucking insides melt and shit.
Oh, my God.
And they just die.
That's wonderful.
Damn.
But I guess it's like I guess it's hard to trace. It just because I think
push me off a building or something.
Nah.
So I get a little thrill before I go.
Now I'm going to dissolve your insides.
Nah, your insides are going to be dissolved. And,
shit.
And Tina's going to drink them like a spider or something.
I always use poison for all my murders. That's like one of my
right.
rules in
Wonderful.
Life. You know?
Got it.
I don't do all this fucking messy, like, oh, I'm going to strangle you.
Nah,
I'm going to beat you over the head
you know
with a mallet
that
or
makes
something.
Sense. TJ would not do something like that. He'd want to be as like little confrontation as possible. It's like, I'm just going to poison you.
Nice passive-aggressive murder. That's how you got to do
it. Yeah, then he just waits, la, la, la. Okay, Scotty's dead now. Go and collect my big check. I mean, hey, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of death, TJ, we're here tonight for a purpose, TJ. Not just to run our mouths about inane bullshit.
Yeah, to plot
Darn.
Stevie's murder.
Oh, yeah, well, besides that.
For years.
Besides.
Okay. I don't care.
Besides
someone needs to die.
Okay, yeah, how about you just kill yourself? Then you're dead, and someone has died.
I'll go jog in place until my heart gives out. How's that?
So about we got about 5 minutes, guys.
I was gonna say.
Yeah, well, that's a lot. You think 5 minutes is generous?
I think it's way generous.
Okay, well, damn. You know what a format war is, TJ?
Yeah.
What is it?
I don't.
You said you did.
I know.
I was so eager. I was excited.
You're like, yeah, I know it.
You say you asked me a question. I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, me, TJ.
No, like, you know, it's like when here we see Beta versus VHS. Obviously, VHS won that. It was
it's
like
two competing
Blu-ray
formats.
Versus HD or fucking.
They're available
know.
At the same time, and consumers have to decide which format they're going to adopt in mass. And one of them, you know, there's not room in the market for both of them.
Essentially, yes. I mean, not always, but that's pretty close. So, a format, this is the Wikipedia section, if you guys just see if you're wondering, describes competition between mutually incompatible proprietary formats that compete for the same market, typically for data storage devices and recording formats for electronic media.
Hell yeah.
It is often characterized by political and financial influence on content publishers by the developers of the technologies. Developing companies may be characterized as engaging in a format war if they actively oppose or avoid interoperable open industry technical standards in favor of their own. So basically, they have standards that all, so you're basically linked to their devices only.
Right.
You know, so like obviously Betamax was made by Sony. So that's an example of that. But that's just not the first one we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to get there. We're going to kind of go through more of like a history.
Well, why is it the first fucking picture then?
Because it's the one people are probably most familiar with.
No, it's not.
Like culturally, I would say most people talk about this like, oh, it's like Betamax. You know,
okay.
You know, these gentlemen are.
I like the format on the right.
Yeah, me too.
Format I like
on the right
is
awesome.
Hey, Paul, weren't you? That's that fucking dumbass hairstyle you think about doing.
Well, I mean, he doesn't have as much fucking
he don't
mutton
have...
chop as I'm looking to keep.
Yeah, I mean, he's not as muttony as you would be.
I'm looking to keep the full fucking mutton chops.
But you know what? That's
stash.
A pretty fucking, you know, that dude, when he ate stuff, I mean, you know, that mustache, like he sacrificed.
Oh, yeah.
To have that mustache.
For sure.
Because that's a fucking soup and everything else catching motherfucker right there. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, but do you know who they are, TJ?
Yeah.
Okay, who are they?
The one on the left is H.G. Wells, uh-huh. And the one on the right is Wilford Brimley's dad.
Senior, yeah.
Yeah, Wilford Brimley Senior, dude.
On the left is Thomas Edison.
Yeah.
And on the right is George Westinghouse.
Yeah.
These are the
I was just testing you.
The war of the currents, TJ.
The current war.
And this is basically...
Which is no longer current.
Ah!
Ha!
That was
TJ,
witty.
TJ.
It was one witty point for TJ.
It was frightfully witty. I'm going to go ahead and give myself a tally.
I'm frightfully witty.
A tally mark.
Tally of your wit.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So direct current, TJ, versus alternating current. AC/DC, right?
Yeah.
Not just a rock band, TJ. You may not know that.
Yeah.
The 1880s saw the spread of electrical lighting with large utilities and manufacturing companies supplying it. So that's basically what's going on at that point, TJ. Mm-hmm. The systems ran on direct current and alternating current with low voltage DC being used for interior lighting and high voltage DC and AC running very bright exterior arc lighting. So one's more seen as like one's for outside and one's for inside.
Okay.
So this is what happens, TJ. During the 19th century, Thomas Edison noticed that there were problems with direct current electrical systems, enlisted Nikola Tesla to design a more practical form of power transmission. Tesla told Edison that the, quote, future of electrical distribution was an alternating current rather than direct current. So Edison was a big proponent of direct current. He wanted, he had a boner for it. He wanted that to be the standard. And like I said, obviously at the time there's kind of a competition because it's like, you know, Tesla is saying, hey, alternating current is just going to supplant direct current and basically, you know, direct current is going to have very limited use.
Which it pretty much did.
Which, I mean, yeah, you can still find things that run on direct current.
Sure, sure, sure. But most of, like, the electricity that we use alternating current way more.
Yeah, well, for your home, yeah.
Yeah.
Edison, of course, didn't take Tesla's advice, but he should have, because at the same time, the guy on the right here, George Westinghouse, introduced his own alternating current generators across the country.
Looks like his name should be Stuart Humpernickel.
Stuart?
Not George Westinghouse.
I don't know.
Stuart Humpernickel III.
I don't know. By 1887, after only a year in the business, Westinghouse already had more than half as many generating stations as Edison, said Gilbert King of the Smithsonian.com. So already, in 1 year's time, they're catching up rapidly to direct current. So Edison, of course, he's like, well, maybe, you know, we can work together. Maybe there's something we can do. Edison, nope. He basically refuses all offers of working with Westinghouse and trying to make a cohesive standard that just like, hey, look, we can both win, basically.
James Willoughby over there should have listened to Stuart Humpernickel. He knew what was up.
Actually, that's H.G. Wells. You have to remember that.
Oh, yeah. H.G. Wells. My bad.
Edison decided there was only one thing to do. To prove that Westinghouse generators were more dangerous than his own.
Electrocute an elephant.
Yep. So in order to prove his claim, he held public executions, oftentimes in front of reporters, of animals such as dogs and horses. And in fact, even elephants. Though the elephant did come later on.
What a dick.
I think it was in 1903.
Yeah, I've seen the video of him shocking an elephant, and it's pretty fucking...
So, TJ, can you pull up the...
Yeah.
It's a pretty electrifying video.
That's a young George Westinghouse.
Wow, he really was fucking into that hairstyle. He didn't fucking change shit.
Stuart Humpernickel, look at him. God damn.
You know, I know that this fucking gets said a lot, Paul, but he does look like you, man. It's not even the facial hair or nothing. It's his eyes, man.
Oh, he's got the Zygo eyes.
He's got your eyes, man.
Wow.
He's got your eyes, Paul.
Maybe I need to do that hairstyle.
Old man Edison.
Old man Edison, he sucks. Electrocute some more elephants, don't you, you piece of shit.
Yeah, so, TJ, if you want, we can just play the video real quick.
Yeah.
So this is basically to prove that alternating current is super dangerous.
I want to fucking play.
Mit Wechselstrom setzte dem Leben des Elefanten ein Ende.
Oh, we got some German, too.
George Westinghouse ist empört.
I don't know what that means.
Fantastic.
Diese mit einem Generator.
Mit Look how dangerous it is.
Setzt dem Leben des Elefanten ein Ende.
I mean, to some people...
Das ist mein Teil.
To some people, wouldn't that be like, you know, an advertisement for the...
Look how powerful it is. It can even kill an elephant.
I mean, yeah, that's basically what it is. So it says, in order to make sure that Topsy, this is the elephant, emerged from the spectacle more than just singed and angry, she was fed cyanide-laced carrots moments before a 6,600-volt AC charge slammed through her body. Officials needn't have worried. Topsy was instantly killed, and Edison, in his mind anyway, to prove his point. Dude, that's fucked up, dude. I guess, so it also says a crowd of 1,500 witnessed Topsy's execution. Dude, that's just fucked up, man.
Yeah.
They murdered this elephant.
People used to be pretty fucking hard back in the day, because their lives were all fucked up and hard and struggly, so, like, watching something like an elephant die and feeling, like, emotion about it, that's a luxury of the modern age, dude.
Plus, you didn't have no Xbox or nothing, so.
Oh, look at that! He electrocuted the whole fucking elephant! Did you see it? Oh, yeah, I was there! It was great! A great break from chasing rats around my tiny little hovel! Oh, yeah. They gave us 15 minutes off at the forced labor factory to watch that elephant die. Highlight of my week.
Times. The times, man.
They have definitely changed. But not that much. So, Chigi, around this time, a dentist from Buffalo, New York, named Alfred P. Southwick, was hoping to develop a, quote, more humane method of execution than hanging. Because I'm hanging so, I mean, it's so harsh, TJ.
Yeah, hanging sucks.
I mean, I don't want to be fucking hung.
Let's electrocute
people. Yeah, look
people.
At this. This looks even better, right? Strapped to a chair with something fucking weird cone placed on your head that is going to electrocute you to death.
I know when I look at this this painting here, I think, wow.
Humane.
Humane.
It's so humane, man.
So a more humane method of execution than hanging. And after seeing a drunkard accidentally kill himself by touching a generator, he decided electrocution was the best idea.
That dude died pretty quick.
look at that drunk. Yeah, he's fucking dead. You know what? Maybe we can do that to criminals.
This gives me an idea.
Oh, my God. He reached out to Edison for help with this contraption. Edison was publicly against capital punishment and instead directed Southwick to Westinghouse, hoping the name Death Machine would become synonymous with alternating current generators. In fact, Westinghouse...
Can I just say that Edison had a really weird strategy with this shit?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, aside from just, like, the ethical shit, it just seems, like, really weird. Like, I don't understand how he thought this was gonna, he thought, if they know that it's being used to kill people and elephants and shit, people won't want it in their house. Is that the idea?
Yes.
It didn't work.
It's saying, look at this huge animal, and look how dangerous this is. If you even go near this, look what it can do to an elephant. What do you think it's going to do to you? So he was just trying to sway public perception to make it seem like, oh, this is so dangerous, but direct current is very safe. It's such a safe thing. So it's like, ironically, even though this guy is all about, his public stance is against capital punishment, you know, he's obviously more progressive on that front, but he's secretly funding this just for, you know, a corporate rivalry. So, I mean, take it as you will. But anyways.
He's a nice guy.
The term Westinghouse pretty quickly became a slang term for death by electrocution. Westinghouse naturally did not want his generator to be associated with the death penalty, and he refused to sell his generators to public officials. As a result, New York State commissioned another man, Harold Brown, to build the first electric chair. So, I mean, you can obviously see the sway and influence Thomas Edison has. Like, they're basically like, okay, no one will sell us one. Well, then we'll build one to fucking execute people.
Right.
So let's see. Despite publicly denouncing capital punishment, Edison secretly financed Hale Brown's project in order to ensure that the first electric chair would be constructed using alternating currents.
So he didn't want his name to be associated with it, but he wanted to make sure it was the most efficient death machine that could be made. So he just kind of shadow funded it.
Yes, and obviously he understood this was going to become a public spectacle because obviously, like, you know, oh, there's this new way to electrocute people.
Right.
Tired of the old hanging? Come watch a dude's eyeballs melt out of the socket.
Yeah, I mean, like, people at the time are just like, you want to see that hanging? You know?
I mean, they lost their luster, dude.
You've seen 100 hangings, you've seen them all, you know?
Oh, I've seen 12 this week already.
And it's a brand new technology. I mean, you have to think a lot of people are kind of like, this is almost like magic killing this
There's
dude.
There's got to be a better way!
And now there is, you know, now introducing the electric chair. Eventually, the day of the first electric chair execution came, which, of course, in humanity, that's not that surprising. The hapless guinea pig was a convicted murderer named William Kemmler. Perhaps unsurprisingly, Southwick was ceremoniously invited to attend the event. So he basically see what people think of this. Like, So saying it's like a big to do and it's like a party, it's pretty much saying that that's accurate. The guy is like, yeah, now we're going to kill this guy. It's going to be great.
People were just bored back then, man.
Yeah, I mean, like, what did you have to do? Like, I mean, think about it.
There was
no
Netflix.
You sit around in your fucking
Disney
house.
Plus.
If you have a fucking spare moment from, like, whatever you're fucking, what do you have to do to sustain your existence? Pretty much all you can do is just kind of sit there and stare at your fucking hands.
Guess I'll look out the window for a while. Watch the carriages go past.
Hope some of those rats come back. So for 17 agonizing seconds, electricity coursed through Kemmler's body.
How come they killed the elephant so damn quick, but they couldn't fucking kill this guy, you know?
I don't know.
The elephant dropped like a fucking rock.
I think they wanted to make sure he was dead. And then he was pronounced dead. And just as Arthur Southwick announced, this is the culmination of 10 years of work and study. We live in a higher civilization today.
Yeah,
everyone
dude.
Noticed that Kemmler was still alive.
So it didn't even kill him? It
yeah.
just tortured him for 17 seconds?
So basically, this is being lauded as like, you know, like we've really attained a higher level of consciousness
right.
in our civilization. Now we're
a more humane way.
Now we're executing people with, you know, electrocution. I guess, if we went from lopping people's heads off, that was the most reliable way. Like, cut their head off, then we'll just hang them by the neck so it's not as bloody. Now it's like we're just going to magically kill them almost, because most of these people didn't have any idea what electricity was or have any idea or conception.
They had guns back then, didn't they? What happened to the good old bullet to the brain?
That's pretty violent, though.
It's violent, but I mean,
it's usually pretty quick.
This cooks people's fucking brains, their eyeballs melt, their fucking bite their tongues off and shit. It's crazy. You know what I mean? It's violent, too.
It's more humane.
Nah,
man. Put a bullet in my head, man.
It's more humane.
So, it took some time for the electric chair to rebuild its current, but when Kemmler was shocked for the second time, the current completely cooked his already damaged body. Some horrified witnesses fainted or ran out of the room from the smell of burning flesh.
Oh my god.
Others claimed to see smoke at the top of his head.
No shit. Cooked him.
So, George Westinghouse did have a comment about this. They could have done it better with an axe.
Yeah, they could have. He's right.
Here's actually a quote from Edison to end this, too. Nonviolence leads to the highest ethics, which is the goal of all evolution. Until we stop harming all other living beings, we are still savages.
So that's a dude. You cooked an elephant in front of a fucking crowd. What a conflicted dude.
Obviously, he was still a savage by his own account. You know, I think that was maybe he had those higher ideals or aspirations, but
more savage than the average person. I don't know anybody that's electrocuted an elephant.
I know, right? And all just to win a format war. So ultimately lost. So the War of the Currents, I mean, truly is not yet even done. DC lost out to AC in the early days of electrification because a efficient long-distance transmission required high voltages, while the public needed safer lower voltages. So basically, it's just the transmission was more efficient and easier with AC.
Which is probably why fucking Nikola Tesla said it was
the
future.
That required transformers, which existed for AC networks, but not for DC. So when it comes to transmitting large amounts of power over long distances, however, high voltage direct current, which is called HVDC, is way more efficient than conventional AC lines. And actually, I think China is building a bunch of those lines. So
the war is not even over yet.
Yeah, so DC might make a comeback, dude.
Are they cooking elephants over there in China yet?
I'm sure they probably are. It's China.
It is China.
I mean, most countries are like, probably no. No, it's China. Yeah, they probably cook some
probably
elephants.
Doing it.
Racist. What are you guys saying about Chinese people? They just cook and eat anything? They just cook an elephant?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
You know what this is, TJ?
It's an 8-track, right?
Fucking 8-track.
I've never actually heard one of these?
No, neither have I.
Have you ever heard one, Paul?
Yes. I still am this way. I can't really sleep without some kind of noise. And when I was real little, my mom had an old 8-track. It was like a big standing 8-track player with a record player on top of it, too. Mm-hmm. And a whole box of 8-tracks and shit. So I've actually listened to 8-track. I've used 8-track. I rode my old grandpa's car that had an 8-track player in it. So yeah, I've seen this. I've seen this format before. I've heard it.
Then you definitely have the most experience with it of any of us here.
So like, what was it? Is it like, how is it comparable to like a cassette or a CD? Or
it holds way less songs per program or whatever the fuck. Like you used to have to have like multiple 8-tracks for an album, I remember. So yeah, it just holds less, and but you it was like front loading. You probably seen people use them in the movies at the
very least. I mean, I've seen it.
It's like a cartridge, and you just kind of plug it in. But I don't remember. I mean, I was a kid when I was listening to them.
Right. So you don't
really
remember like the sound quality.
I didn't really
like
have
that.
An ear for the sound quality, but it played the fucking songs. You know, it was basically just a giant tape.
Essentially, yes. So this is portable audio formats, 8-track and 4-track cartridges versus the compact cassette. Next image. So this is the same album.
I like that.
I would say at least the box for the 8-track looks cooler.
Yeah.
Well, the 8-track was bigger. I mean, like, that's the thing about, like, a lot of these older formats, because they had to be so fucking huge, they could fit a lot more imagery and shit on there.
Right.
So, yeah.
So, while rather successful into the mid to late 1970s, the 8-track eventually lost out due to technical limitations. Okay, so that's actually not where we want to start. Okay, so the 8-track started to get attention in 1965. That's almost exactly when cassette tapes were introduced to the market, so they came out very much at the same time. The difference is that cassettes were basically mainly used for dictation, and 8-tracks were kind of marketed as for music. Dictating, TJ.
Oh.
Dictating, TJ.
I can see where TJ's mind is tonight.
Dicks.
So when Ford Motor Company began to offer 8-track decks in its 1966 model cars, the format took off. So basically, Ford offered this, and people were like, yeah, fuck yeah, I want 8-track in my car.
I can take my music with me. You know what I mean?
So it gave people mobility for their music collections, says Howard Kramer, the curatorial director for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland. It allowed you to say, I'm going to go on a trip, I'm going to stop at the store, and I'm going to buy the new Beatles record, the new George Jones record, and there's a compilation of stuff on this particular label. And be able to listen to just what you want and not twist around the AM dial trying to find music.
I don't buy it.
Something we totally take for granted
nowadays.
Sounds
too fanciful for me. Yeah, because like,
you can get any song you want at the touch of your fingers with, you know, multiple devices around your house. You know?
Yeah, you know, pretty much any song I want to hear, I can like, be listening
to
in
seconds. Before this came along,
so.
If you, you know, going on a long-ass 12-hour road trip, you were at the mercy of whatever radio station was playing shit because... You know, you can't be bouncing around in a car with a record player.
Fuck no, dude.
Doesn't work.
But 8-tracks did have their limitations. Say it's 1977, and you're listening to the newest David Bowie song through your girlfriend's portable 8-track player.
Yeah.
8-track tapes typically divide up a 2-side LP into 4 programs. If the song cannot be split up evenly, a song might be cut in 2.
Right.
First, it would fade out. You'd hear a click. That would indicate the program change. So basically, the dreaded click
sucks.
Could be a mood killer, depending on, well, of course, the situation. Typically, you would, just for 2 or 3 seconds, and you would stop making out, wait till the click, and then go back at it. It was sort of a ritual. So people basically, like, got when they, you know, you got used to listening to shit on 8-track, it was like, hey, when's that click happening? Okay, this is the song where you're going to hear the click, and it's going to switch over.
Right.
And obviously, with cassettes, you just didn't have that
There was
issue.
No bullshit.
No, you just didn't
there
have
There was no goddamn
problem.
Click.
Just had 2 sides to the cassette, A and B.
Yep, that was it. And I mean, really, what did this came down to was just economics.
The thing I remember about cassettes too was a lot of times they would fucking you'd have a cassette in there, and then all of a sudden it would go, and then the fucking tape would start shooting out of the deck, and you're like, what the fuck?
Oh yeah, it could happen.
And then you fucking have to get it out of there, and then you try to like.
But 8-tracks had the same problem, honestly. They had
spool that shit
a roller up towards the top, and you plugged it in that rolled the little fucking tape.
But you know what the real advantage ultimately of this was that this was a little bit more reliable for sure. I mean, 8-track had a better sound.
I mean, they were little pieces of shit
for a
too,
time.
So like they were probably pretty cheap.
But
to
you
manufacture.
Know what? Cassettes ultimately almost basically caught up or about equal to, in a lot of people's opinion, the 8-track with you know later updates and refinement to the technology. But as far as this, it was just cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, they were little cheapy pieces of shit. Even at the time when they were charging serious money for these. They always look like little flimsy, cheap pieces of shit.
I think just being smaller, when portability is the factor, too,
yeah.
The fact that a tape is probably about half the size of an 8-track. I mean, I remember, like, my mom used to have a big zipper bag of shit, and it had about 10 8-tracks in it. It was huge. You could put fucking 10 tapes in there and have room for 20 more, you know?
Yeah, easily. I remember going to the, I mean, I still remember when I was a kid, there being like a cassette section at the fucking, you know, music stores and shit.
Oh, yeah, dude. All the music that
big
I bought
wall,
first.
A big, big giant wall of just fucking. Because
I had
cassettes.
A Walkman back in the day. The original kind of tape player, that portable tape player thing. Everybody had one back in the day. So
absolutely.
It was definitely like. That was pretty cool. I don't think that would have been possible.
Oh, dude, I had a bunch of.
I had a little radio that I could record shit on, and I would like. If I was listening to the radio, I'd like record songs I liked and shit.
That's why people loved them, though. That was the big appeal of.
Yeah,
because
I had like blank tapes, and you just there's like little easy record options. So if there's like a song coming on that I wanted to hear, I could just record it.
In the 80s, you would have those two deck stereo systems. You put the tape you wanted to copy in A and put the other one in B and just hit play on one and record on the other.
Yep.
And it would just dub you a fucking copy you could give your friends and shit.
Yeah, and then you could be like, yeah, here, I made you a copy of the, you know, new Ozzy album or whatever.
Piracy at its finest, dude.
Yeah, that was the old days of piracy.
I mean, just...
I mean, still a battle that fucking music distributors are fighting to this day.
Much harder battle to fight, though.
They've basically just embraced it now.
I mean, they had no choice.
They've just started releasing this shit publicly and monetizing it differently. You know what I mean? Because nobody's buying physical media anymore.
That's why touring is so much more important.
Yep.
for the entertainment industry now.
Yeah, you can't make no money on these albums no more.
Because like all the shit online, it's like, yeah, you might make a little bit of money, but the big money is those tours. And I'll tell you what, the price of those tours are fucking insane.
Yeah, tours and merch.
So, can you pull up the article we have for the demise of the 8-track?
Yes. Oh no, poor 8-track.
Oh, 8-track.
See,
get out of here, ad. Get out of here, other ad.
Get out of here, Pinterest. We don't care about you.
8 reasons the 8-track failed. So let's hear.
Unreliable.
Totally unreliable. Unfucking reliable.
I mean, you got to give it to them. They look pretty fucking cool, though.
Primary reason 8-track went extinct is an unreliable piece of shit. They simply weren't built to last and subsequently earned a reputation as being ticking time bombs. Truth be told, brand new 8-tracks often sounded good, and the tape themselves were virtually indestructible. They never melted in the sun or cracked. It was the internal components that started to fall to pieces over time. If the manufacturers hadn't opted for cheap construction, things might have turned out... Yeah, not ultimately.
I mean,
we wouldn't still be listening to 8-tracks to this day or anything.
I gotta be honest with you, though. That first fucking criticism could be made of tapes, too. I mean, they failed at a pretty remarkable rate.
I mean,
rate.
I remember...
Yes.
And were
cheaper
made.
I remember a lot of fucking tapes I had. Like, I mean, I talk about it. Like, the tape comes out. It fucking... You're caught... I mean,
or it gets stuck off in the... fucking radio.
I just think that
you'd pull it out and it'd be all wound up in the fucking spools up there.
And then
you
have to
fucking
dig tape out of your fucking deck
and then rewind it with your finger.
Yeah, and you have to do that stupid procedure and then it never fucking plays right and it starts to sound shitty. Car stereos hated them. Anyone who had an 8-track player in a car knows the trauma of having the tape eaten. Once again, also a problem of tapes.
Yep.
The annoying song fade out. Scotty already discussed that.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Now, that's one that you cannot... That's one advantage cassettes clearly have.
Copyright problems. What does that mean? 8-tracks were the first music medium to introduce the issue of copyright protection. The fact that you could easily record them brought floods of illegal copies to truck stops and flea markets across the U.S. There's a famous story of Jerry Lee Lewis taking a baseball bat to a shelf of bootleg 8-tracks he came across when he stopped for gas. However, the issue never became widespread enough to affect the music industry, how the music industry did business. It wasn't until the MP3 format that shit started going down. Filthy and trashy music collection of shame.
No, I don't see a problem with that.
Damn.
I'm liking it so far.
So it's just like chicks moaning?
I don't know. Despite the fact that 8-tracks... began as techno marvels developed by Bill Lear of Lear Jets, no less. They soon earned a reputation of being not only unreliable, but also tacky. As I mentioned, the case was basically bulletproof, but the sticker was not. Thus, everyone's collection consisted of sturdy cartridges with worn and peeling stained stickers. There was no real outer decorative case, as with a CD or cassette, just the cartridge. And so, unlike the source of pride, which was your record collection, the filthy 8-track collection often became a thing of shame in the floorboard of your car.
It's funny that people wanted extra shit that didn't actually have anything to do with the music. You know what I mean?
They wanted to
it's
look
like,
nice.
Like, oh, this comes all in one piece, and you know that ended up being a negative against it.
You can't rewind. It may seem trivial, but not being able to rewind became a real downside of the 8-track. It was a breath of fresh air to be able to roll backwards with a cassette tape. this negative wasn't quite outweighed by the strong positive quality of the 8-track. It was on an infinite loop. While the cassette and record would abruptly stop when it reached the end of a side, the 8-track would play for an eternity, or at least a few hours, before it busted. The dreaded bleed-through.
Bleed-through.
I won't go into the mechanics of the 8-track. There's Wikipedia for that.
Or this show.
Or our show.
Or our show.
Damn it. I'll just point out that if the heads become misaligned even slightly, a very common occurrence, the one track would bleed into another track. Worst case scenario, two songs at equal pitch playing at the same time. Best case, a faint background of an altogether different track. Either way, it was a thoroughly miserable listening experience. That sounds horrible.
Yeah, I don't have enough clear memories of,
and
of
taking
it
all
to
the,
remember that
taking
happening.
Taking all
but
the snobbery and, you know, nitpicking reasons away. Money.
Just cheap,
it's
cheaper.
Just like, yep, you know what?
Cheaper, cheaper, cheaper.
Bigger bang for your fucking buck.
Yep.
Fog Hat live on fucking 8-track?
Hell yeah.
Shit.
Dude, who does not want that? You know what this is, TJ?
It's a vinyl. Yeah. It's a record.
It's an LP.
This is actually a CD.
Is
oh.
it?
Oh,
okay. I couldn't tell the
you know what, TJ?
Scale. I guess I couldn't tell the scale.
Should have put a banana there, right?
Yeah.
Just as the cassette, TJ, would go on to beat out the 8-track, soon the cassette would find itself on the chopping block.
CDs were pretty much, I mean, like, 8-track and cassette, it was kind of like a competition, but CD versus fucking cassette, it was no competition at all. I mean, this shit just demolished the fucking cassette, man.
And this would come about in 1982. That's when compact disc actually first
right.
started.
I mean, it didn't immediately fucking dominate the market, but, like, when people realized the advantages and shit, I mean...
And it's a clear advantage.
I mean, you could... The fact that you could skip tracks and just go anywhere in it you wanted, there was no rewinding, any of that stupid shit.
And that was a big thing at the time, too, because, like when you saw it even later on, I mean, this kind of whole the optic thing, the first cartridge thing even played out in the 90s, remember, with the, you know, the consoles. It was like, oh, are we going to use a cartridge, like Nintendo 64, are we going to use, like, PlayStation, use a CD?
Plus, you could fit fucking cool booklets in it and shit like they used to do. But I mean, you couldn't really have a fucking album booklet in a fucking cassette.
Right.
But you could have it in a CD case.
To the LP days, because a lot of people love that.
Yep. Yeah,
know,
and it was
how the records were had all the big art in them and room for all the extra shit.
And this obviously didn't have as much room as a fucking record.
Well, the shit that came with tapes sucked too.
Yeah, it sucked.
I mean, even though you got a little packaging, and it would
really
probably
small.
Stay, you know, cleaner than an 8-track would. It was just a little booklet with some lyrics in it, or
something. Yeah, and I mean, like, it was tiny.
Yeah,
it was a tiny thing. So the CD was like kind of an upgrade in that regard. And plus, you know, I don't know, they kind of look cooler. It was way easier to skip around on them. I mean, it's just fucking much better format.
Oh, I definitely agree with you. So in 1974, Philips had the initial idea for CDs as a replacement for records and cassettes. During the same time, Sony was also working on their own prototype. Sony's offering was the first demoed in 1976. Eventually, the two companies came together, which is rare, but it happens sometimes, and CDs were officially launched as a viable format in 1982. Sony had also introduced the first ever CD player that year, the CDP-101 compact disc player, which at the time cost, how much do you think it, Paul?
$600-$700, something like that.
TJ, are you looking at that?
$1,000.
What is it?
Yeah, you're actually right.
Yeah.
$1,000. The first CD player cost $1,000.
Yeah, I mean,
which
these technologies always start prohibitively expensive.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing CDs around until the early 90s. Like, I mean, it was very rare to find somebody that had a fucking CD player in their house.
Oh, fuck yeah,
until
dude.
Until, like, 90, 91, when they started to become more affordable.
I mean, yeah, I mean, look, $1,000. So, with inflation, that's probably, like, $3,000 or $4,000.
It's insane. Nobody could afford to have
one. So that's, like, for people with money.
Yeah.
It
was a rich man's game.
A rich music aficionado.
And a gadget lover's game that's willing to, you know, spend a lot of money on the new thing.
So with CDs.
You need those early adopters, though.
Well, yeah, you definitely need them. Well, with CDs came portable CD players, CD-ROM drives, writable CDs, and the 16-bit 44.1 kilohertz benchmark for audio formats, which all had their own effect on how we listen to music. So obviously, of course, you know, with those formats for CD and so many people switching to CDs for the, you know, optimal level of quality, that's the best way to listen to music at that time.
Yeah.
CDs also brought the best of every format that came to it before it. You had high-quality audio, it was compact, it was portable, writable, and inexpensive. So basically, it was almost like the format of every format that came before it, you know, we're talking about vinyls or LPs or cassettes or 8-tracks. You finally had, like, the total package with portability. You had, like I said, the ability to display art. It was just like, man, we've kind of reached the pinnacle of the
what could be
format.
Better than that?
What could it be, TJ?
Nothing. And that's where we stopped.
Yep. Dude, I remember Discmans being super fucking cool.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like, if you had a Discman, you were the cool kid on the block, man. But it just goes to show you that, like, you know, the one that I finally got was some cheap off-brand Chinese piece of shit that my parents probably got for $60 or
$70. You got, like, Walkman, dude.
Right. And when it first came out, you had to have $1,000 to listen to a CD. You know what I mean? More like $3,000 in 80s money. So, pretty insane.
Oh, dude, it's just fucking... But you know what? Just like how cassettes took out the 8-track and how cassettes were taken out by the old fucking CD. Something was gunning for that CD.
MP3s, dude.
The MP3. So the MP3 was originally developed in the early 80s by researcher Karl Heinz.
Heinz!
His postdoctoral work at AT&T Bell Labs expanded on pre-existing codecs for compressing audio. Brandenburg used a CD recording of Suzanne Vega's song Tom's Diner to assess and refine the MP3 compression algorithm.
Interesting choice of a track.
Yeah, the song was chosen because of its nearly monophonic nature and wide spectral content, making it easier to hear.
What does monophonic mean?
I have no idea.
You need to know these things, Scotty. You're the head research on this episode. You don't know what monophonic fucking means, even?
No, dude. I don't know shit about audio.
You're fucking garbage, Scotty.
That's your opinion, TJ.
Monophonic,
making
bitch.
It easier to hear imperfections in the compression format during playbacks.
Uh-uh. I don't buy it. Bullshit.
Some refer to Susanna Vega as the mother of MP3, TJ.
Damn.
I know I always have.
Well, at least she's got something notable, because I don't know what the fuck that song is.
What is it called again? Tom's Diner.
Tom's Diner. Yeah, you can go listen to it.
We can listen to 5 seconds of it.
Yep.
Let me hear this fucking monophonic bullshit.
Go ahead.
Was it only halfway and before I even argue? Okay, I know.
Oh yeah, I know the song. I never knew it was called Tom's Diner, but yeah.
Hey, you learned something new today.
I learned nothing.
If you learned nothing else from this episode. If you watch a 90s movie and you hear this Tom's Diner.
You'd be like, that's Tom's Diner, the first song to ever be an MP3.
The mother of MP3s. You can be a fucking repository of useless knowledge. But it wasn't until 1992 the MP3 went mainstream, TJ. And not until 1999 with the creation of Napster. That the format really caught fire.
Yeah, I didn't know nothing about no MP3 in 1992.
I didn't know about it in 92, but I was getting, like, downloading single MP3s and sharing MP3s with my friends, by 94, 95. It was pretty common.
Oh, really? What were you using then? Because I don't
CDs. Even... So you would, like, okay. I had a bunch of PC dork friends. So if you had a fucking computer with a CD player, you could burn. Now, the size of the file, the compression and stuff wasn't there, but you could burn songs or albums to a CD and share them that way and have it at least on your computer. I existed in that space for a long time after this iPod shit came out. I don't think I ever had like a dedicated MP3 playing device. I would just burn my shit to CDs.
I had one, but it was like when everyone else had like the iPad, iPods and all this shit. I mean, I had some little cheap piece of shit, like, Chinese-made thing that had a menu system that made no fucking sense. And, you know, I pretty much loaded up
what was
music
the fucking
from Napster
failed,
and shit.
What was the failed MP3 player? You guys remember it?
Zune.
The Zune, yeah.
Zune, yep. Bro.
The Microsoft Zune.
Yeah,
oh,
there
God.
Was even a throwback to that in, I think, Guardians of the Galaxy 2. They, like, they give a Star-Lord a Zune, and they're like, yeah, this is what everyone on Earth is listening to now. All right.
Damn.
Oh, the
Zune,
man.
Bro.
Dude, the Zune has some loyalists, though, man. I remember after the Zune was discontinued, people were like, no, man, Zune was so much better.
You got that cheap iPod piece of shit, man. I got the Zune, bro.
Fucking Zune.
Cody was a Zune.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, dude. He had a Zune. He's like,
he had a Zune. He's like, really? I'm going to tell you what. I've tried the iPod, whatever, but the Zune, man. The Zune.
If someone walked up and handed that motherfucker the latest iPod, he would have fucking taken that Zune and thrown it in the trash, man. Give me a fucking break. So in the second half of the 1990s, MP3 files began to spread on the internet. Oh, yeah. how horrible. Often via underground pirated song networks. Pirated song networks.
I gotta be honest with you, it wasn't all that fucking underground. It wasn't like hard to find like MP3s and shit back in the day.
Yeah, everyone was doing it. It wasn't underground at all.
So the first known experiment in internet distribution was organized in the early 1990s by the internet.
By the way, those people were fucking pioneers.
They were.
Because, I mean,
I totally
like,
agree with you.
It was because of people adopting that technology that music is now like,
freely available.
Yeah, just any song you want to hear now, just like go to YouTube or go to fucking whatever service you fucking have, and you just get whatever the fuck music you want to listen to. And the reason that happened was because of all these people, quote unquote, pirating music.
Right.
So they're what the fuck ever.
Dude, they're evil.
They're
people.
Not fucking pirates. They're revolutionaries.
They're evil, TJ. You know they're evil. We all know they're evil. You're evil.
Bullshit.
So you're fucking evil. You know what? You burn sandwiches. Who fucking gives a shit what you have to say? So the first known experiment in internet distribution was organized in the early 1990s by the Internet Underground Music Archive, better known by the acronym IUMA.
Yeah, I don't remember using the acronym back in the day, but I remember using the site.
Yeah.
What is this? Is this the site?
This is actually mp3.com.
Oh.
This is from Wayback Machine.
What is it?
This is a pre-Napster place where you could go and snag fucking songs.
So in November 1997, the website mp3.com was offering thousands of MP3s created by independent artists for free. Just a look at the site here. So, warning, MP3 optimizer. I like how it's like Satan Kill. Just it's totally fucking, just brings you back if you use the internet in the 90s, like how shit looked.
Yeah.
And it's kind of just like, damn. We've come a long fucking way. Let's see here. So the small size of MP3 files enabled widespread peer-to-peer music file sharing of music ripped from CDs, which would have previously been nearly impossible to do. The first large peer-to-peer file sharing network, Napster, which we're looking at right here, was launched in 1999. The ease of creating and sharing MP3s resulted in widespread copyright infringement. Oh, no. Major record companies argued that this free sharing of music reduced sales and called it music piracy. They reacted by pursuing lawsuits against Napster, which was eventually shut down and later sold.
Remember that little bitch Lars Ulrich?
Yeah, oh yeah, dude, that was a big controversy.
He was like the big guy in this thing. He was like super against it, like, fuck Napster, bleh!
He was just a mouthpiece for the industry, but their writing was on the wall with this shit. Like, they saw this, and they're like, we don't like this at all.
I mean, they basically saw the demise of their monetization model here.
Yeah.
Because, you know, one person would buy this shit, and then it would be spread to 20,000, 30,000, 100,000 people. You know what I mean? They just lost their ability. And I got to be honest with you, they did that to themselves in a lot of ways. You guys remember how fucking exorbitantly expensive new albums
were? Oh my god, yeah.
On CD back
in the
90s?
So basically, like, a CD, a little piece of fucking shit plastic.
18
was,
bucks.
Yeah, like 20 bucks.
Yeah, 18 bucks, 20 bucks, 15 bucks if it was an older one.
Oh, you want like a special deluxe one? That might be like 40 bucks,
and
50 bucks.
That's, you know...
That's in the day, too. So
that's 20
that's
bucks in 90s
inflation.
Money.
You know, so we're talking like probably like, I don't know, 30 bucks?
Yeah, 30 bucks.
35,
40, 40 bucks.
Something like that.
Just fucking over the top expensive for something that people like. Look, all the kids using this shit, or a lot of the teenagers that were adopting this shit, remembered being able to go and buy a tape for $5.99. That's the price point I remember being associated with new tapes at the store. $5, you know what I mean? And like less than 10 years later, it's $20. Yeah, there. So I think they jacked up the prices to try and fight this. So that every sale was more, but it just pushed more people to this type of shit. You know, and it all spread by word of mouth, too. You know, you just had a friend that would come to you and go, oh, dude, you try this Napster thing? You just download any fucking song you want. Oh, okay.
Oh, dude, and then so many of these proliferated afterwards. It wasn't like this was the end of it. It's like, you know...
Remember LimeWire?
Oh, yeah, LimeWire was a big one. I mean, look, here's the fucking problem. When you let the genie out of the bottle, it's not like people are going to go, oh, there's this great technology that we can share all kinds of music. Now, let's just not do anything with that. Let's just, oh, no, the record company says keep buying CDs. Like, no one's going to keep buying CDs when you know you can just go online and fucking get this shit.
Right.
It's not going to happen. The model was fucking over and done with. And as we later saw, Some of the biggest devices in the early 2000s and the late 90s, what were the fucking, was like the iPod and MP3 players. Like I said, the Zune, we'll never remember the Zune because it was in direct competition with the iPod to be like, what's going to be the next big fucking device? And it was for all, that was like, because back then people were not super obsessed with their smartphones. Like smartphones didn't really exist in that sense. Like there was like maybe tablets that were trying to do that, but that hadn't been perfected. So that, a big status symbol for people technology-wise was if you had an iPod.
Right.
And I mean, eventually, obviously, of course, I mean, like CDs, the sales of CDs, I mean, like they still, I won't say this, the CD format is still around.
But they're more of a special order thing now. It's like bands will release a CD and an LP for people that want to have some kind of physical
vinyls,
copy.
Vinyls are like really still big. And CDs, honestly, they're still hanging on, but obviously we know the market.
These are
going.
Like specialty markets at this
but
point.
But they're also simultaneously releasing it for free streaming somewhere.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
On some service or another, they're putting it out there for people because they just know.
And they know it's going to get, look, and their songs that now get, they get monetized on YouTube and they get billions of views or 900 million fucking views. So it's like they're still making money off this shit with that, in that sense. And they're obviously touring and merchandise, and obviously the industry has become way more tech savvy, I mean, out of necessity. But as far as the physical format, you know, their whole business model of the music industry was totally changed by this. And you don't have to, like I said, like no one's going to keep paying this exorbitant sums of money. When you can pay, at this point, pay for an internet connection, stream whatever you want. And I mean, that's really, if we were talking about the next kind of phase of this, you know, that's where we are currently, which is the streaming phase.
People don't even download shit anymore.
I'll tell you, the video game, not to stick on this for too long, but the whole video game companies, right around the same time that the music companies were fighting this, they started fighting it as well.
Yeah.
Because downloading a video game became possible in chunks and shit. And you put it all
who
in,
didn't?
And everybody was doing it because what the video game companies did is they eventually met at least me as a consumer halfway. When a fucking game is new, if I don't really want it, I'm not paying $60 for it because in 6 months or something, they're going to drop the price to $25 or $15 or something.
Oh, it's going
to
be a sale. And it's
you know
okay,
what I mean?
Half off.
That wasn't happening with CDs. They were trying to keep that fucking price point too high.
Oh, fuck no, dude. Like, it was just like. Well, that,
you
at
charge
that
more for early
at
access,
that point,
basically.
They had the consumer buy the balls, but then the power dynamic completely shifted in favor of consumers, and of course, that's when, there's a problem now. There's piracy. You know, you're not just someone that's listening to a song. You're stealing.
Yep.
Now you got to talk about the ultimate format war, dude. The one that everyone knows about.
Good old Betamax versus VHS.
VHS versus Betamax.
Oh, yeah.
You know which
the
one?
The Battle Royale.
TJ, you still remember?
Yeah, can you still identify these?
The beta's on the top, and the cuck is on the bottom.
damn, TJ.
Anyway, no, the beta, yeah, the top one's the beta.
Another witty point, TJ.
Oh, thank
another
you.
Another hash mark.
The top one is the beta, the fucking bottom is the VHS.
Right.
Shouldn't the beta be on the bottom, TJ?
Yeah, I mean, considering how the VHS fucked the beta, it should be the other way around.
And you know, the sad thing is that, I don't know, I believe that the Betamax was actually a superior format in a lot of ways, but...
Well, we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
So Sony, along with other companies, started creating videotape recorders in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
But it was far too costly for most people to own one. I mean, it's like, you know, like we talked about with the $1,000 CD player. It's like, you know... The $1,000 fucking tape recorder. It's like you're not just, most people are not going to have them. So Sony released the Betamax in 1975 to try and capture the home recording market. So Betamax was like, you know what? We don't want to be this super niche thing where it's like only rich people can have it. The Betamax, maybe we can get into more homes now and expand our market. Because I mean, obviously during that time, the market is expanding rapidly for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, they want to fucking actually make the real money. And the real money is not catering only to rich people. It's making something you can sell to fucking everybody.
Yeah,
you want it in every household.
Exactly. So soon after, JVC launched its VHS, and that's when a full-fledged format war was born. Both formats allowed people to record directly from a television signal,
mm-hmm.
And both machines are pretty similar in what they do. I mean, like, look, a lot of times you'll notice with these things, like, the difference, like, it's kind of like the A-track and the cassette. Like, there's differences, but they're very small. But at the end of the day, there's one big fucking thing against Betamax that only sunk it. But we'll talk about the differences now. So one of the differences was
I was always told the picture quality was better on the beta.
It was.
Yeah. So Sony's Betamax machine was way heavier than the VHS deck, and the parts for the machine still remain pretty pricey. So in return, what JVC did was they made their deck simpler and cheaper to produce, which allowed VHS to undercut Sony. Still confident, however, Sony. They weren't going to give up. They're like, look, you made it cheaper. All right. So basically what they did was what they did with Betamax is they transformed to become more simple and offered better picture quality than VHS. Not to mention the tapes were smaller too. So look, smaller tape, it's better quality. Sounds great, right?
Yeah.
Well,
what happened?
Those weren't the most important selling points for consumers.
What was the most important?
What's crazy
point?
Is that Betamax, which had initially actually owned the market. So keep this in mind too. So Betamax at one point was basically the market. But it lost it because it got a fucking terrible. It made a terrible decision. It chose to make smaller, neater tapes that lasted for 1 hour, whereas VHS manufacturers used basically the same technology with a bulkier tape that lasted 2 hours.
So you get two hours on a fucking VHS.
Yeah, so instead of pouring over the sound.
But only 1 hour on a fucking Betamax. But it was a better quality. But I guess that people were like, fuck that, I want quantity.
So yeah, so instead of pouring over the sound and picture quality, reviewers could simply have taken the systems home. Their spouses, children, grandparents, whoever, would quickly have told them the truth. We're going to go out tonight and I want to record a movie. The Betamax tape is useless. It isn't long enough. Get rid of it. So right. Just saying, like, when people wanted to record a fucking movie or a show, like, hey, we're going to go do this other thing, we want to record this program, can't do it. It's only an hour.
You could do up to 2
and
hours.
I mean, I remember there being VHS tapes that had more than 2 hours at some point.
That was definitely.
Like, eventually, I think they got up to, like, 10 hours or some shit.
I don't know about that.
Pretty sure they did.
You can look it up.
Let me see.
What's the longest amount of time you can record on a fucking maximum, you know, I don't think it ever got up to 10 hours.
Pretty sure it did. Let's see.
Yeah, I don't know how long.
So I remember like longer
maybe 3
movies
hours.
Coming in sets of 2 or 3 fucking.
Yeah, like Braveheart.
VHS's. What's that, bitch?
Oh, damn. Shit.
What's that, bitch?
Right, oh, shit, dude.
What now, Paul?
Jesus, man.
Bam, motherfucker! Destroyed!
Jesus fucking Christ.
Fuck, dude. Holy shit, TJ.
Whoa, man, I'm fucking pwned. The fuck can I do?
I don't know.
So, I mean,
life is over for you.
You know, actually, a common myth about this is actually when they started losing market share. This is actually the first Betamax ever.
Oh, it's kind of.
It came with a TV.
Is it plugged in with the TV?
So, wait, is
yes.
This,
is this all one unit?
It's integrated. All one thing?
Yes. Dude, I wish I had one of these motherfuckers. That's so cool. Look at it. It's got an old analog nuclear fucking silo looking clock on it. Oh, I want this.
Price tag was $2,295, dude.
That's steep.
Ooh, buddy boy. That's a that's a spicy meatball. All right,
so here's a standalone unit that you don't have to get a whole TV with.
So my stepdad has a unit that looks very much like this.
I'm not surprised.
You remember that movie we watched back in the DP days, Terror Vision, TJ?
Yeah. Did you first see it on one of these?
Yeah, the first time basically. I ever saw it, it was one of the like 3 Betamax movies he owned. He used to bust this out and plug it in. And, yeah, the video quality was good. You remember all the scan lines and weird kind of tape imperfections you used to get on VHS?
Oh, yeah.
They didn't have it on there?
Dude, I don't remember seeing a fucking lick of that shit. It was really good quality on the Betamax. But
well, the crazy thing, too, is a lot of people talk about, like, you'll talk about price, but eventually when the VHS was really starting to win the war, Betamax was actually cheaper for a while.
And here's some early VHSs, too.
Yeah. This is the first
VCR. I remember those top-loader VCRs, dude. Yeah. Where, like, the whole fucking holder for the tape would pop up out of the top, and you'd put it in and then push it. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We had one of these or something like it.
First Panasonic VHS
VCR. Oh, they changed. Because by the time I was a kid, it was that front-facing.
They were all front-loaded.
Yeah, yeah, you would put it in, and there was a little mechanism that would pull it in.
Yep.
And push it down into the heads.
That was pretty cool. Yeah, yeah. You put it on the top.
Oh,
there.
Damn. Look at that one down there. A small wonder from JVC. It's like a portable one.
That's a tiny cool, thing.
D-Zam. I didn't even know you could get one of those.
Yeah, old technology is kind of neat.
Do you ever play with an old VHS camcorder?
Yeah.
Yeah, my friend John had an old VHS camcorder that we used to play with. Thing looked like something that a fucking newsman would have. You had to hold it on your shoulder. Man, yeah. I love this old technology shit.
So I don't know if this is true, but I remember my dad used to always talk about how one of the reasons VHS won was because they allowed porn on their fucking format.
I think that was one of the things that definitely helped it because it was a more inclusive platform. So if more people are using it, hey, I don't think that JVC gave a fuck. It's like if they're using our format,
Sony was stupid for giving a fuck. They didn't know that people wanted porn.
I guess not. They're like, no smut on our machines.
So while Betamax focused on its and its ads and energy on basically time shifting, their ads featured headlines like "Watch whatever, whenever." While JVC, the maker of the VHS system, created relationships with the nascent video rental industry. When this market grew, VHS dominated in titles. While you could for a while find both formats, eventually retailers began giving shelf space to a slightly more dominant brand, which was VHS, and eventually entirely to VHS, because more and more people just were using VHS, and eventually...
Yeah, I remember going to Blockbuster as a kid, and I don't remember there being no fucking beta section.
But by the time you were probably remembering, that war was already over.
That war was done.
Yeah, there was all tapes.
Beta had lost.
I remember when Blockbuster switched over from tapes to DVDs and shit. I'm sure we'll talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
But Blockbuster, dude, not to get off on a fucking tangent here, but I'm telling you, like, and I will admit, the modern fucking way of getting movies, like streaming them directly, is vastly superior to the old model. There's something I miss about going to a video store, not just a Blockbuster, whatever it was, you know what I mean? Going and looking at the wall and renting a movie. There's something like...
That was kind of magical, but you know what fucking always sucked was late fees, though.
Well, yeah, the late fees fucking sucked. But
that was garbage.
I'm just talking about the experience of going like, dude, I want to watch a movie. Let's go down to the fucking video store. Let's wander the aisles until we find something that looks like it's fucking good.
The thing about it was because right when you're watching something now, like there's constantly this nagging voice of like, I could be watching something else.
Yep.
There's always like, I don't like this. I'm going to just scroll through some other shit. And there's just like
you didn't have to be decisive.
The perusal decision, the amount of time you spend perusing content is almost like, at least for me, it rivals the amount of time I spend actually watching anything.
Yep.
So, I mean, like, but back in the day, you went to the store and there was that perusal part, but then you picked your shit and you went home and that was it.
Yeah.
You had made your fucking choice.
And it sounds bad. It honestly does. Like, I'm thinking about trying to explain this to somebody who's never really lived in that paradigm. And it does sound bad. It's like, oh, your choice is limited and you've got to force yourself. Because you would. You'd pick a stinker.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And if you picked some piece of shit, you were stuck with that piece of shit.
And we're going to talk about that more when we get to the last part of the episode. But, like, yeah, I definitely agree with you guys. And there's also limitations on streaming. But like I said, we'll talk about that. We're actually not too far off that part of the show. Same old story.
DVD.
A king rises, TJ, and then a king falls.
I mean, it's literally the analog of how the audio market went, too. It moved from, like, a reel-to-reel tape system
to CDs.
Yeah.
But they called them DVDs.
Well, because they were, you know, they could hold more data.
Sure.
So, denser.
So, as the VHS had its time in the sun, the DVD would rise. VHS was king for a couple of decades, had it good, had a cushy fucking spot. From the early 70s to early 2000s, VHS was basically the only format that regular people could afford to watch home movies and record home movies.
VHS was legit.
Like you said, the tapes continue to get better. Like you showed earlier, TJ, a 10-hour tape.
DVDs are bullshit.
VCRs got cheaper.
VHS for life.
I know, dude, the videos got way cheaper. Like, I had a thing when I was a kid, like Sleeping Beauty. And there was a price tag on it, was like $89 or something. And I asked my mom one time, like, you didn't pay $89 for it, really, did you? And she's like, yeah, I did.
Jesus.
Like, so, like, if you wanted to buy tapes back in the day, dude, those tapes were
That's why the rentals were such a big thing.
Yeah, tapes were fucking expensive. But even at that time, towards the end of it, tapes were getting cheaper and cheaper. You know what I mean? You're starting to see tapes in the bargain bin and shit.
Because, I mean, once again, we're talking about a piece of fucking plastic with some fucking, you know...
magnetic tape in it.
Yeah, I mean, this is not... There ain't no fucking huge cost of manufacturing this shit. They're just charging what they know they can get away with.
So, you know, that's why I pulled the Blockbuster image. Blockbuster on every corner and trendy shirts reading, "Be kind, rewind," were on display at practically every high school and college campus in the U.S.
And then it became, don't worry about it, because there's no such thing as rewinding anymore.
Then it became, please don't damage our DVDs.
Oh, yeah.
Be
careful.
And,
man, you would sometimes get them, man, those DVDs.
See, that was a downside.
That was a downside of the DVD. I mean, like, because they would, I mean, like, CDs would get scratched up, but there was no rental market for CDs.
Right.
Or maybe there was, but
and people didn't
if it
give
was,
a
it
fuck.
Wasn't, it wasn't a big market.
They just use it as a coaster while they had it, you know what I mean?
Right. But a fucking DVD, man, like, that fucker got scratched up.
You were
next
fucked.
Thing you know, you're fucking pulling it out, you're washing it, you're blowing on it, you're drawing all this bullshit, trying to get it to fucking
DVD,
work again.
Remember all those stores have DVD repair and shit?
Yep. They sit there and fucking re-varnish the motherfucker to try to make it play again. Ugh.
But TJ, you know what? VHS just couldn't fucking, it couldn't battle against it. A better, newer, crisper technology arrived to knock poor VHS off its perch. This is the fucking DVD, TJ.
Ooh.
DVDs, more compact, clearer picture quality. You know what, TJ? Fuck rewinding. DVD, you don't have to do that.
Yeah, the ability to pause and move back and look at frames of movies and stuff became totally possible with this. Because try and pause a VHS and take a look at what you see.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, garbage, dude.
There's a bunch of lines on the screen.
You know what I mean?
So you want to look at the world's first...
Plus, if you press the if you press pause on that one of those motherfuckers, like it pauses like 3 seconds later. So,
of course.
So, Chad, you want to look at the world's first DVD player?
Sure. Where is it? Are you sure that's not a... I think that's a squid.
I think you're right, dude.
I think that's actually a squid.
Oh,
dude.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah. Pretty sure that's a squid.
You know what? You're right, dude. It is a squid.
Yeah, I don't think that's a DVD player. That's a squid. You pulled the wrong thing.
I'm sorry, man.
So this is it? This is the one here?
Toshiba SD-3000 DVD player? No, wrong!
Are you sure
wrong.
This is it? Because it don't look like it, man.
1997.
Oh, the first consumer DVD player.
Yes.
All right.
Toshiba blessed the world with what many experts believe to be the first consumer DVD player on the market. Well, it's still up for debate, so I guess there's debate, but
you know what?
It's acknowledged as the first one.
You know what I noticed? Looking at, even though I never even owned a fucking Betamax player, I looked at those Betamax and I got like a sense of nostalgia. I got a sense of nostalgia when I looked at cassettes.
Tapes.
And I got a sense of nostalgia when I looked at fucking the old CD players and shit. Oh, look at this. I ain't got no sense of nostalgia about this thing.
Yeah, DVD sucked, kind of, dude.
It's kind of like, meh.
I mean, compared to, like, streaming, you have... Like, look, DVDs have some advantages, for sure. But, I mean, yeah, I don't think really... Well, in a sense, they haven't really totally gone away, either.
I mean, yeah, there's, like... They're like a specialty market, like, still buying a CD or an LP or something.
And, I mean, if you do want a physical format, you're going to use a DVD or a Blu-ray. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, it's still around. The format just hasn't totally died out yet.
But it's not what I mean. Like, this is not the main way people get their shit anymore.
No. So DVD overtook VHS tape sales in 2002, and VHS never recovered. Once DVDs and DVD players became more affordable, there was really no reason to ever watch a VHS tape again.
Yeah, there is.
Damn. I mean, there really isn't, though. The fucking scan lines and the tracking and the weird fucking imperfections
so
in the video.
That was the fucking character
shit
of the
sound
thing,
quality.
Man.
Yeah, I know. I agree to a certain extent, but if you've got a choice of watching a beautiful movie on tape or DVD, you're kind of stupid for watching it on tape.
I'll watch it on tape.
I completely agree with you, dude. I do not miss tapes at all.
There weren't any movies that I think were fucking like made better by being more fucking grainy with worse sound and tracking problems.
You're garbage.
Today we're going to summarize 5 reasons why VHS died.
Okay.
VHS tapes are big and prone to damage, while DVDs are pretty and slim and reliable.
No,
also prone to damage.
Well, not as prone, Paul. VHS uses magnetic tape to store video and audio data, while DVD uses optical media. So like we said, you can instantly go wherever you want in the movie. VHS tapes need to be rewound. Obviously, you don't rewind a DVD. VHS tends to lose information pretty quickly, what you're talking about, Paul, because of the analog nature, while DVDs can store information for a very long time when stored properly.
Yep.
And the last reason as well, more people just wanted DVDs. They're a better format.
They're just cooler.
They're cooler, man. They're fucking the laser disc.
They look like little futuristic saw blades.
And when I watched some movie, it was like, oh, what the... And like they're like, oh, we have DVDs, and people are like, damn, DVDs. I'm like, you know, that must have been fucking the mid-90s.
Yeah, dude. I love that Hellraiser movie where one of the dudes becomes
Hellraiser
CD 3? Face. Yeah.
Yes, dude. Yeah, he's like the camera in his head or something. Or
no, there's a dude with a camera in his head too, but there's also a dude that just has like CDs hanging out of his head, and he throws them. He throws them like ninja stars
and
shit.
Yeah, wasn't that in fucking Hellraiser
that was
3 or something?
3,
yeah.
Yeah,
dude. Okay, yeah, you're right. Yeah, fuck, dude.
Was this, you call him something in your
CD
review?
CD face.
Or, I thought, was it like disc face or did you say CD face?
I don't know. Must have been. It was one or the other.
One of those. Blu-ray versus HD DVD TJ.
This was the stupidest one.
Yeah, this one chapped my ass.
This was the
fierce.
Dumbest fucking one.
So go to the next image, TJ.
No, not this image. All right. So this is a comparison, I guess.
This show you kind of like...
Can I just say something about this fucking format war before we get into the specifics of this shit?
Yes.
This was the dumbest format war ever.
How dare you?
Because there was pretty much, like, the differences between the two things were fucking minuscule. And, like, it was obvious that one of them was going to win and one of them was going to lose. So, basically, it made me not want to buy either one of them. Like, I didn't want either of these fucking things because it was like, fuck this. You know, like, one of these is going to go away. Everyone knows one of these is going away.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to fucking wait until there's a fucking clear winner. And by the time there was a clear winner in Blu-ray... It was like I'd already moved on from fucking physical media. So
streaming,
fuck it.
Streaming had happened.
I definitely get to that part of it. I just pulled this because it's just interesting to look how similar they are. So maximum native resolution support, HD DVD. So
same.
It's the same.
They're exactly 720p, the same.
1080i, 1080p, Blu-ray, identical.
So basically, video capacity is slightly better on Blu-ray.
No, it isn't. It's actually like a mirror of itself. Look, you can get 8 hours of HD content on an HD DVD, 9 hours on a Blu-ray, but you can get 24 hours of SD content on an HD DVD in comparison with the 23. It's literally they're trading 1 hour.
Either way.
So it's the same shit.
Really, the biggest difference was the disc capacity.
So Blu-ray has larger disc capacity.
Yes. They have support for 7.1 sound.
They're both the same on that.
But see, a big difference you'll notice in this one is the PlayStation 3 has a Blu-ray player, because obviously it's
came
built
standard.
By, yep.
Whereas the Xbox 360 or whatever
you had to
the fuck.
Add it.
Yeah, you had to buy the version that had a fucking HD DVD player.
And it looks like there was a lot more studios that were back in Blu-ray than HD DVD as well.
So we have to kind of set this up. So looking back to 2005. HD TVs were finally available everywhere, but not everyone had one yet. A study by the Leichtman Research Group would put the adoption rate at about 12% by the end of the year. Nintendo even declined to make HD-ready version part of its new game system at the time, the Wii. So, yeah, a lot of people remember the Wii didn't even have HD.
Right.
So, because it was kind of like, HD TV, that's kind of like a niche thing. No one's really...
honestly. Like, that's another format that took a long time to catch on, was people switching away from standard definition CRT televisions to these flat panel digital televisions. So while this was going on, that was also going on, too.
And they had their own format. Remember, it was plasma versus LCD.
Because I remember for the longest time, it was a long time before I bought a TV that could do HD. Because it also meant that you had to buy media that was in HD, so I had to make this fucking decision. Do
and
I get
this
the fucking
thing here
Blu-ray
is the add-on to have HD DVD on your Xbox.
Yep.
Which, so, by the way, if you spent money on that,
yeah. So we kind of almost get into part of what's the console wars as far as the PS3 versus the Xbox.
And here's the Blu-ray, which is incorporated in the PlayStation there.
So Sony and Microsoft were both ready to place calculated bets in the HD era of gaming. So they were actually the early adopters of this. Was like, look, we want to kind of push the envelope here. So the PS3 obviously went with Blu-ray. Microsoft actually stuck with plain DVDs, but it promised an HD DVD add-on for the future. So Microsoft wasn't really willing to fully back HD DVD the way Sony backed Blu-ray, because this was an add-on that was an additional $199.
Right. So, and then for a format that was dead within like a year or two, at least it felt like that, short of a time.
About 3 years.
It barely fucking made a peep.
The console's arrival is trying to be a particularly welcome sight, too. The first dedicated players to ship were crudely designed, made from leftover laptop parts, with slow and glitchy performance, and retailed for around $500 for an HD DVD, or $1,000 for Blu-ray.
Dude, Sky, what am I thinking of when I'm thinking of, like, there was, like, a thing where, like, the movies were on, like, little things, like, this big that was around for, like, 5 minutes.
Like a mini, I think it was called Mini DX or something
like
that.
Yeah. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
They were like this big.
Little tiny
things.
I know what you're talking about.
And the GameCube actually ran on it.
Yeah.
GameCube had those tiny little discs.
They were around for like 5 minutes and then they were gone. And I knew they would be. I think we actually had, I think Scotty had some though.
Yeah, I did.
I feel like he did.
Fuck, I don't remember the name of them.
Why did you have that?
Yeah, there was also...
Scotty was an early adopter of a lot of stupid fucking technology, man.
There was also in the video sphere...
TJ.
You were.
You guys remember LaserDisc in the video sphere?
Oh, yeah. That was a fucking blip on the radar.
Yeah, those things were fucking massive, too, though.
Yep.
I remember those things.
They were like record size.
Yeah, they were like records, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, I had some like a biology class, and it's like, we have it on LaserDisc, and I pulled it out. I'm like, what the fuck is that?
Dude, do you know why I think Blu-ray won over HD DVD in the end?
Cooler name.
Yep, exactly. Dude, the HD DVD Blu-ray format smacks of the previous fucking generation. It would be like if the thing that came after VHS was like HD VHS. It just makes people think of the old shit. You know what I mean? Whereas Blu-ray sounds like something that comes out of the end of a futuristic trooper's gun. You know what I mean? It just sounds like the goddamn future. That's why they won.
Yeah, HD DVD is a turd of a name. So on one side, Sony promised its Blu-ray format could handle capacity, 50 gigabytes. And even interactivity that we'd never seen before. Well, Toshiba claimed that HD DVD could make up the gap in capacity, 30 gigabyte max, a technology by being cheaper and easier to manufacture with plants already making DVDs. So they were kind of just going like, hey, we're going to be the cheaper alternative. You basically can make this in the same place for making DVDs.
Doesn't sound cool enough. Sorry.
As for content, major studios support weighed heavily in Blu-ray's favor, whereas only Universal stood in HD DVD's corner. Once Warner Brothers dropped support for HD DVD on the eve of CES 2008, the war was over. Sony had successfully pushed Blu-ray into millions of homes with the PS3, which basically, that was the thing that ultimately, like I said, Sony was willing to make that investment and that bet.
They're doing nothing but Blu-ray.
And I remember that too, because it was like, at the time I did want Blu-ray. I was like, I was like, oh, if I buy a PS3, I get a Blu-ray player plus I get a console, and then I can watch these fucking... And they also had a thing at the time, if you bought one, you got like 5 Blu-ray movies for free. So I was like, cool. So I was totally fucking into that. Despite trailing Xbox 360 and Wii in sales during the early days of the console war, so this was actually a thing that ultimately paid off for Sony, at least in that, at least as far as the console war. Effectively, it was Sony's decision to make HD discs standard for the PS3 as opposed to an optional add-on. We already talked about that. But unfortunately, there was kind of a dark cloud about this. So to the victory goes the spoils, right? So Blu-ray won, HD DVD was abandoned, no one fucking uses that anymore. Not quite. While Sony's Blu-ray format prevailed, it never quite turned into the cash cow its backers originally predicted. Blu-ray still has an unseated DVD as the primary physical movie delivery format, and it's being squeezed out of relevance by other at the end of on-demand and streaming services. In 2007, Sony took a $240 million hit because, quote, demand for physical media contracting faster than expected. So there you guys have it. I mean,
so right. That's what I said at the beginning of this segment. Is like by the time a victor had been crowned in that fight,
this type
streaming
of shit
was already happening. Now it wasn't happening the way it is now.
No,
but it was the beginnings of it were happening.
I think most people started taking streaming seriously in about 2007, 2008.
Right,
and by that time, like I said, 2008. That's right about the time where it's like. Because I remember I wanted to watch that was the anime Death Note. And I'm like, I'll just buy it on DVD. And I went to Amazon. They're like, want to stream it instead? I'm like, well, I can watch it all now? It's like, yep, and it's cheaper. And I was kind of like, why the fuck not? Why wouldn't I want to fucking stream this instead of having to pay exorbitant sums of money for DVDs?
Hell yeah.
So it just made total fucking sense.
Fuck physical media. We don't need them shits no more, bitch.
I mean, in the same way people were sharing video games and stuff too, by the time the DVD came out and a read-writable DVD drive came out, people were doing the same shit as always. They were just burning copies of movies. Bootleg copies of movies were passed around amongst friends and shit. And then eventually you could just go download the file and write that to the burn it to the DVD.
Yeah, with torrenting was great. You're like, I'll torrent this. But then with the rise of this, and this is really, in my mind, these entertainment companies realize, like, we can't really stop this.
Now so, it's really not a matter of...
So now what we need to do is make it even better than that. And streaming is better than torrenting. So, yeah, it's actually the easiest solution, and they own it.
And not only that, though, like, I think what we're seeing here now, this isn't really a format war. Now it's more like a library war. Like, who's got the best library of shit for people to watch?
I mean, the next step that I always dream of is when these companies realize that
consolidation.
Yeah. I mean, having one service that has every song ever recorded to a physical format and every movie ever made for one price a month, that is going to be fucking amazing. Like, I don't even care about the antitrust implications of it. I don't even care about the fucking...
Yeah, we're way past that at this point. Who cares?
I literally want... Because I'm not the type of guy that's going to go around and have 8 different fucking... You know what I mean? So I'm still limited because I don't pay all these different companies for all their fucking different libraries.
At this point, I'm paying more for all of my combined streaming services than I would pay if I was getting cable.
Yeah, I mean...
So it's just gotten to that point.
Well, look at this here. I mean, Disney Plus and Hulu, I mean... Disney owns 90% of Hulu.
Right, so that's almost the same
I mean, that's
now.
Almost the same one now, so you can really take them off the board if you're being honest. Sling Television, sorry, they're not even real competition. Showtime, come on. CBS All Access, that's a nice little attempt. Acorn TV, I don't think, look, the major players here are Netflix, Amazon, and Disney. And yeah. that's obvious. And I mean, look,
who will prevail?
And Amazon has a weird kind of platform thing too, where you can add these. So they're almost like little subcategories of Amazon. Like you can get Showtime through your Amazon
right,
device.
Yeah.
You can get HBO.
All of
get,
this stuff that we're seeing here is on Amazon too.
Right.
So there's you can get like you can watch Disney Plus through
I mean,
Amazon,
let's be
but
honest.
Then Amazon has its own shit as well.
Amazon basically has licensing deals with those companies. I wouldn't be surprised if Amazon just bought those companies at some point and just said, hey, we need to have...
It wouldn't shock me because, I mean, we're already seeing these bigger ones gobbling up these smaller ones.
And I think Amazon would be really smart to buy HBO because HBO has always had a... they've had a fucking just a... I know what you would call it. Almost a prescience, like where they know what... Because almost all of the big series... The Sopranos, Game of Thrones, HBO's had so many of these fucking massive series. Like, and Amazon, that's what they really lack is any like standout series. Like, they've made some ones that people like get a little buzz, but if they had really teamed up with HBO and got some of the creative minds there, I think Amazon could really be more of a force to be reckoned with.
I gotta be honest with you though, HBO is kind of slipping. Like, I had an HBO subscription for Game of Thrones when that was a thing, and the other shit that's on HBO along with it, like, the HBO has kind of become like I don't even really check it. Like I think I still pay for it now, but I don't even really check it when I'm looking for movies because they have a pretty limited selection of films.
Yeah, I was thinking I should probably just get rid of that.
And if they don't have a big show,
yeah,
like the last thing that came out on HBO that I really wanted to watch was Chernobyl.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I mean, just having one good show. When you've got all these other, you know, options that have multiples of that.
Well, that's part of my argument, though, is that I definitely agree with you. There's almost every service can have shit content on it. But if HBO could focus on those, like the ones, like you said, like Chernobyl, Game of Thrones, like these really good series, and leave a lot of the filler content to just like Amazon's huge library and already existing, you know,
yeah,
content.
See, Netflix and Amazon, they have this fucking business model where it's like they have old shows, too. So if you want to go back and watch an old... TV series or whatever. HBO don't got that. They're relying solely on their killer apps, you know what I mean? And when they don't have one around, there's really not a whole lot of point to having HBO.
Well, yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, that's why you have to align with one of these big companies because Netflix, they spent about $8 billion last year on their content. Yeah. Amazon, I don't know. I'm sure they're in the billions. Disney,
they got a bunch of their own shit,
I mean,
too.
Disney spends billions every year, but I mean, really, this is probably the smartest move Disney's ever fucking made. Because this space is like just this is where everything's going. So Disney Plus, and I mean, I know I think already 10 million people have signed up for it, probably 20, 30 million.
Oh, I mean,
by
that
this
was
point.
That was like it was like the first day that was 10 million. I'm sure it's fucking past that by
and
now.
I just think with the existing back catalog, I wouldn't be surprised if Disney supplants Netflix or Amazon. I don't know.
I can tell you what,
I wouldn't be surprised.
They've definitely got a hit with The Mandalorian at this point because everyone's fucking talking about that Baby Yoda shit. That's just everywhere. It's just fucking ubiquitous.
Yeah, I think Disney's got a hill to climb here, though, to be honest with you, because Amazon is already positioning itself by subletting a lot of these channels.
Yeah.
Showtime, you can get through your Amazon device. You know what I mean? They're already making overtures in the direction of gobbling up these other fucking things.
They're going to have to come out with some really great shows, though. That's really the deciding factor, because Disney has such a strength of its catalog and the movie side of it. And the constant promotion, I mean, like, Disney marketing is everywhere. These theme parks are more popular than ever. It's so hard. I mean, Disney just has so many avenues into people's homes now. And, like, I just think it's going to be really hard.
I'm fine with the Disnoverse. If they're the ones
like
that gobble
movies.
It up, I'm
I mean,
fine
look at,
with it.
Dude, look at the shit like these Frozen 2. Frozen 2 is a fucking huge thing. And that just pushes more people because, you know, what's going to happen? Oh, where's Frozen 1 now? Yeah, now your kids saw Frozen 2. Where are they going to see that? Oh, they want to see them all the Disney movies? Just go here. Instead of having to pay every time one of these movies comes out, you can just have this one fucking product.
Yeah. I mean, it's a weird. It's weird to kind of try and think about how it's going to go down because Netflix has that instant name recognition and some pretty good fucking proprietary
shows.
Yeah,
oh, I definitely agree.
Movies.
It's been a while since they've had a breakout show, though.
Amazon has a more scattershot approach. They're doing like the shotgun approach. They have a lot more, I think, than Netflix of this like original content.
You know who's also making a big play in this space right now is Apple TV.
Yeah.
They put, I mean, that's clear they invested a ton of money. They have like some big actors, big shows pushing out every time I watch a television program, like a sporting event, and I see fucking 10 ads for Apple TV.
For me, I'm just like, man, I'm already, there's enough for me. I'll fucking check out Apple TV in like a year or two when I feel like I'm a buzzard.
I mean,
fucking...
the follow up to this one in fucking 5 years will be the streaming wars, dude.
I mean, it's already
what are you talking about? We're in the streaming wars.
No, I'm saying, but who are we going to declare the winners?
Oh, who's going to be the winner? I don't know if there's going to be a winner. I just feel like what needs to happen, and I don't know if it will. I mean, we talk about how sometimes consolidation is possible.
It is.
I don't know, man. I feel like these companies just need to get together and be like, look, let's just put all of our shit under one fucking big banner, under one fucking price point, and fucking, you know, we'll figure it out.
But if this episode has taught us anything, that can happen. Like, with the case of CDs.
Yeah.
It can happen. Companies can come together and say, let's work cooperatively. But a lot of times, it's like they just can't do it because there's such a profit.
I mean, just imagine if even two of these companies just got together and said, let's be friends.
Oh, like Netflix and Amazon said, okay, now.
Yeah, like Disney Plus is fucking a threat. Let's you and me join up and fucking form a cooperative on this shit.
There's still a gap, though. I'm telling you, there's still shit that this doesn't serve up unless you're willing to pay all these fucking companies, and most people aren't.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to watch an old gangster movie the other day, so I went down the line, like, you know, the Scorsese type of gangster movies, the Goodfellas and the Casino and the Godfather. Every last one of them is on Showtime right now. So if I want to watch a gangster movie, I got to pay Showtime. They're $9.99 a month. I can't get it on any of these other platforms.
Right.
Stuff is still segregated in pockets, and that's going to cause people to reach outside of these fucking things and pirate it. The only way that they can cover it is if when I fucking hit the little button and talk to my Alexa remote, that fucking movie's there. I just say the name of a movie and boom, there it is. You know what I mean? Whoever fucking establishes that or when we get to that point.
Yeah, like the Omnitainment Corporation, you know?
They're going to have
to. It's got to come.
Because these little differences in library become big, glaring problems when your whole fucking marketing gimmick is everything at your fingertips. Well, it's not there yet. It's not everything.
Oh, definitely not.
It's a small selection of everything, and I got to fucking pay, you know, 8 different monthly fees. That's just not sustainable as a business model. So they're going to have to fucking consolidate, or people will just start stealing this shit.
Let me see which ones I'm paying for on the screen. I'm paying for Netflix.
Uh-huh.
I'm not paying for Hulu.
I have Hulu.
I don't like Hulu that much. I'm paying for Amazon.
I have Amazon.
I'm paying for Showtime. I'm not paying for CBS or Sling.
I have Disney Plus.
I have one of the HBOs. I don't know if it's Now or HBO Go.
It's the same shit.
One of the fucking things. I don't even know what Acorn TV is, so I don't have that. And I have Disney Plus. So I'm paying for 1, 2, 3, 4 of these.
And I'd be willing to bet you're an outlier when it comes to the average consumer.
Probably.
I think most consumers probably have 1 or 2 of these subscriptions. Amazon is smart by giving it subscription with other things. You
with
know
Prime,
what I mean?
Yeah, if you're a Prime.
So I have Amazon by virtue of the fact that I have Amazon Prime. So I have Amazon.
That's the same for me.
And Netflix. And I think I still have an HBO. So I have 3 of these. And I think, once again, I think that's more than I should have.
Oh, I guess I have 5.
But one of the downsides of streaming, and we talked about, obviously, the spontaneity of going and selecting a movie. Like you said, the finality of saying, hey, I picked this movie, I'm going to watch this movie.
Right.
Whereas with streaming, you can say, this movie's not, you know, tickling my fancy, next one. Whatever. Doesn't matter. You know, you pause it, watch it whenever the fuck you want. With obviously with the, you know, with late fees and, you know, when you actually rent a physical medium, there's more of an app you just actually go and watch what you rented.
Right.
But another thing is, some shit just isn't available to stream. I consistently come across content I like to watch that I can't because streaming rights lapsed. Or
I can tell you one.
There's some dispute about the rights.
I can tell you one you can't find.
What?
At least I have not been able to find it. I can't figure out where it's streaming, if anywhere, is All in the Family.
Yeah.
I wanted to watch All in the Family.
It's a fucking issue about the rights to it.
I've wanted to watch All in the Family. There's things like there was a show on CNN where they fucking were talking about All in the Family, and it's like this big cultural fucking landmark show that was like probably, if not the best sitcom of all time, it's in the contention. And it was a fucking major like social force. It was a huge ratings thing. I think, you know, you still see its cultural impact to this day. But I can't find anywhere it's streaming. I can't even find anywhere I can buy the fucking thing to watch.
A lot of the Miyazaki movies, like, occasionally you'll see, like, something like Princess Mononoke or something. But, like, I was like, yeah, I'd like to watch one of those online. You have to buy a DVD.
I'll watch
still
Porco Rosso or whatever the fuck. And it's like, oh, no, I can't.
There's still huge gaps in the library. Like, a lot of older movies, too. You have no choice but to buy them.
We had to buy a physical copy of goddamn Frogtown 2.
Right.
You know? Because we couldn't find it streaming. And that's a fucking crying shame, because who doesn't want to watch Return to fucking Frogtown, I ask you.
Not many people, apparently.
That's why I'm pushing for, you know, one of these monolithic companies to just gobble up the rest, because it's the only way. You know, you just acquire the streaming rights through a grandfathered fucking provision and one of these other things. And until it gets to there, the war is going to rage on. and the consumer suffers. Because look at this. I mean, there are even more streaming services than you see up here.
It's like it's Arthurian, TJ. Like, we need the one fucking service to unite the lands.
Look,
dude.
I mean, because I buy five of these fucking services on the screen. So there's more that I buy that I don't buy. I also have subscriptions to some other shit that's not even on here.
Right.
Like, yeah. I have a Shudder subscription, which I should probably just fucking cancel until Joe Bob puts out a new season, really.
Honestly,
like,
just a subcategory of Amazon.
Right.
Though.
I should be canceling this shit in between when I'm watching the shows I actually want to watch
right.
on them. That'd probably be a lot
smarter. That's why a lot of these services, you really need something constantly out, or new movies, or, you know, a new show, because if you don't, it's kind of the problem you talked about. If you already watch what you wanted to watch, like CBS All Access, let's say Picard comes on, I really love the show. After I watch the season,
canceled.
What am I going to do with CBS All
Access?
That's
what HBO is dealing with right now. I mean, they had a huge fucking subscription base with Game of Thrones, and then that went away. And, man, I remember when Game of Thrones was coming to an end, they were pushing so hard, like, make sure you keep your HBO subscription, because here's all the other shit we're doing, explosions, and, you know, they're really trying to sell people on keeping their service, but they don't necessarily have the big fucking named show right now that everybody wants.
Try the new Watchmen show that everybody hates.
But it just ends up with there being content kind of behind paywalls that, quite frankly, like, when it comes to having to have six services to get the maximum coverage, most people ain't going to do it.
By the way, no. That Watchmen show, I guess the big plot of that Watchmen show is that there's a bunch of white supremacists trying to turn themselves into Dr. Manhattans.
Oh, woke.
So that they can be the fucking the true master race.
That's very woke.
It's, yeah.
Okay.
So whoopty fucking do for that.
So, man, look, TJ, the format wars.
What's this? We got vinyls here at the end. What's this?
Well, this is kind of just that, like, the kind of the reflection thing. Like, obviously, we've talked a lot about streaming and kind of the loss of physical media, you know, what the implications of that's going to be. But, you know, I still think that there's a place for physical media.
Yeah, they're niche markets.
You know, yeah, it's a niche market. You know, I like vinyls. I don't have the best vinyl player in the world, but I think it's definitely interesting to have something like that and just have a different experience. I mean, yeah, you can have all this shit on YouTube, but it's kind of different to actually own something and have it and look at it and appreciate it for something else than besides just the music itself. You know, it's more of a tactile experience that you have with that.
I don't want to see this type of shit go away, and I used to be a little more on Scotty's side. I used to have a big DVD collection and shit, but I've just kind of, like, liberated myself from that shit now. I don't want it. I don't even want to buy games on disc anymore. I just want to own it in the cloud somewhere and be able to go get it whenever I want it. Like, I'm ready to adopt this new system, and watching,
I think most people have.
Watching these things go by the wayside. I mean, yeah, you know, I'm not going to weep for it, because honestly, I'm not going to go through the trouble to having multiple different kind of physical devices spread around my fucking house when I can just do everything through my TV or phone. You know what I mean? The convenience factor has finally sold me, and I don't really care about this physical media shit anymore.
Yeah.
I
mean, look, that's probably the most pragmatic approach to it. It's just like, yep, it's all here. And I mean, I understand that, and I mean, that's honestly probably, for some people, the most logical choice, and it's the most convenient, and a lot of times people are going to take the most convenient route. And I don't
You're dissing your value system, Scotty. Fight.
I just want to be able to, like,
I'm not dissing my value
fight.
System.
And you've got some stuff where, you know, we're kind of there, where you can talk to your car and have it play, you know, from a library of songs or whatever, streaming directly to whatever your sound system is in your car. But I want that future where I can just sit down in front of my TV or whatever it is, say the name of a movie, and it just plays. Or say the name of an obscure old song that I want to listen to, and it just plays. Or say the name of a video game, and it just plays. You know what I mean? We're heading in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, clearly we are. I mean,
and
look,
I'm impatient for it, because I want that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't think those things can't even coexist. I think that, obviously, people are going to have a desire for physical media, but it's just going to be, you know, more of a niche little market that people enjoy. I don't think it necessarily is going to have any impact, and it clearly hasn't, on supplanting digital media and streaming, because that's just going to become, I mean, look, the faster connections we get, we're about to head into the 5G era with cell phones, where, I mean, you're not even going to need a wired connection anymore. So, it's, for all intents and purposes, like, streaming is just going to become the format. Like, when you're not limited by that, streaming is what makes sense. But still having these physical formats, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think that they can't exist at the same time.
Yeah, I'm fine with people, you know, keeping it, but I think the writing's on the wall.
I got your damn wired connection right here, boy!
That was a failure.
It was
dude.
Silent. Ugh, it happened, gross. But it was silent.
Dude, you fucking failed, TJ. This episode's done.
TJ Man, just exhaled out
the
of his
fuck,
ass.
Fuck, dude.
I needed a fucking big.
Dude,
I'm going to edit a fucking fart into there.
You know what,
I'm
TJ?
I'm
going to
cheat it in post.
You're all a bunch of hot air, TJ. Not even a fucking fart.
Damn. Damn. Dissed. Dissed again. Fucking guys are retards. I don't even know why I do a show with these motherfuckers. I'm too highfalutin and intellectual for them. Bye.